All right, everybody. Thanks for coming back for another episode of That's Criminal with yours truly. That's Criminal, where we talk true crime, books, authors, writing, and just about whatever else crosses my mind that day. Today, I'm very excited. I have two guests, Craig McGuire and Carmine Imbriale. Craig is a best-selling true crime writer. His titles include Brooklyn's Most Wanted, the top 100 criminals, crooks, and creeps from the County of Kings. Beyond the Ides, Why March is the Unluckiest Month of All. And his most recent title, Carmine and the 13th Avenue Boys, Surviving Brooklyn's Columbo Mob. Carmine Imbriale.
The war. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And Carmine Imbriale was an organized crime figure in the New York Mafia. His story, how he navigated, survived the Columbo War, is the focus of Craig's book, Carmine and the 13th Avenue Boys. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's start off with how you two got together. How did this book come about?
Craig, you want to take it or you want me to take it?
Sure, I got to call mine and then I'll hand it off to you. John, really appreciate you having us on. Can you see me? Am I okay?
I can't see you. I can't see you. I can hear you.
Okay, good. Let me fix that. This is the book published by Wild Brew Press, selling well, hit Amazon number one in a couple of categories, you know, getting some great reviews online, very excited about it. Had the privilege to connect with Carmine. I want to say, you know, maybe over three years ago, pre-pandemic, legendary South Brooklyn detective Tommy Dades, who I worked with on a previous project, introduced me to Carmine. So he said he had someone for me to talk to about a possible project. So I remember it was like a cold winter day. I got a call from a restricted number. And from that very first conversation, it was just one amazing, funny, dramatic, humorous, clever story after the next just came tumbling out. You know, and after this long journey together, we put together this book. And when you look at Carmine and the 13th Avenue Boys, it's not a history book. It's not an expert account of the New York Mafia. It's a collection of stories from a street level mafia associate for one of the most brutal crime families in New York. Also, Tommy Dades wrote our intro. Thank you, Tommy. You know, can't thank you enough for helping us along this amazing journey. But Karma, what he summed up in the intro was the setting, 13th Avenue. You had all five families operating at once. It was a Columbo stronghold, but still you had all the families operating and all the hundreds of associates and hangers-ons and customers just swirling around. The social club where Carmine was most active, Nettie's was across the street from the infamous Wimpy Boys Club. But there were a dozen clubs within a mile radius, including the Veterans and Friends Club, Christy Tick's Club at the 19th hole. Just a remarkable situation, circumstances that came together. And along comes this rough and tumble, aggressive, very outgoing young guy named Carmine. And Carmen, let me hand it off to you. Just describe the environment, this powder keg that you grew up in.
It was a lot about sports. I got involved just because of, I had an argument with a wise guy. So one of the guys stepped up, Carmine Sessler, and said, listen, you can't do that. Of course, they argued. Obviously, the guy went and told me once to kill me or something. So we went and sat down. And he goes, listen, Carmine's with me now. So his name is Carmine S, and I'm I. So from now on, Carmine's with me. So he goes, I just saved your life. Like, okay, so now what? I says, can I still fight this kid? He goes, no, you can't do that. So let it go. But from now on, I was obligated to him. My father used to say, the minute you get to do one favor, you're going in. They're going to, you know, grab you any way they could. Before you know it, I had a Sherlock book. Over $100,000 in the street. And I was doing well. I got married at an early age. I think it was like 22 or something. Still with my wife today, Janet, and I got five kids. And I used to play ball all the time. I used to play football on the concrete. We had concrete tackle. It was crazy. I had so many concussions, you can't believe it. Then I used to box, played stickball, softball. I was into, like, the guys at Netties were my friends, my teammates. The other guys weren't, like Wimpy Boys. And there was other guys in hanging out in the restaurant, Chirico's. You met with Jimmy Ida. And I just got around. I got around because more of the old timers, they saved me a lot of times. And I had respect for them, a lot of respect for them, because they would talk it out with you. So my big line was, before I went to sit down, you say, listen, I didn't know it was yours. That was mine. But whatever it is, I'll give it to you back. You know, they all used to go, okay, at least I'm showing them respect, you know. I started saying as soon as I walked in, whatever it was I took, I'm sorry, I never knew it was you. So my cousin used to drive me from sit down to sit down. He hung out in the Wimpy Boys, Joe Brewster. So every time I went to a sit down, I came out. One guy gave me a union card. One guy gave me an asbestos card. I was in three unions at one time. And my cousin, I don't understand. You don't get yelled at, nothing. We talk like gentlemen, and the old timers would do that. They're not going to look to whack a kid in the neighborhood for peanuts, you know? But I happened to run across one guy, Anello Della Croce, underboss in the Gambino family. One time, me and one of my friends, we got a tip on from this cheese factory, Cremosa cheese. So my guy inside told me there's going to be all electronics on this because they're all stolen there. Okay, so we follow him on a Long Island highway, have a car pull over, and told the guy, get out of the truck. Get him out of the truck. I told him, I'm not going to hurt you. I promise you. I just handcuffed to him, tree. All of a sudden, like next day or that night, Joey calls me and goes, that's Joe Brewster. And he goes, you need to come in because I got to give you a ride. What did I do? He goes, Anello Della Croce, I don't know what you did. I said, it could be a number of things. But when I sat with that old man, I'll tell you, first of all, I told him, Mr. Della Croce, if I would have known it was yours, I would have never did it. I hope you know that. So he goes, okay, let's get to it.
Hey, Carmine, I hate to interrupt, but tell us what was actually in the truck instead of the electronics.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, right. It was all pizza dough and ricotta. So now we hustled around. We sold the doughs, like, lower prices than what they were ever getting. All the pizzerias. We went around. We got that shit done, and we made $17,000. So when I had to go in with Della Croce, I just said, I'm so sorry. I didn't know it was yours. So he goes, all right, let's get out of business. How much did you make on the load? I said, $17,000. So he goes, all right, I'll take $7,000. You take the $10,000. That was fine with me. And then he says to me, I want to know the pizzerias you sold it to. I said, I can't do that. I'm not going to tell on them. Really, I hope you understand where I'm coming from. Okay, I understand. Okay, good kid, he goes. So after that, I'm ready to walk out. And he goes, whoa, where's the driver? The driver was still handcuffed to the tree. So I had to take a ride out there with two guys. And it was like getting dark. I found him. I was yelling. Oh, he was like, couldn't talk water. And I came back to him. Lucky he said it, because I would have forgot all about it. And it just came back. And all of a sudden, I have respect from the guy. And my cousin used to go, I don't understand what you're doing there. I talk the truth. I'm not going to lie to these guys. You know, and that's how I did with all the bosses. I had a boss, had to go see Hung Tan, you know, Craig with Richie Tick.
Yep.
Yeah, Chris Tickey, right? I forgot what he was. But he was a boss. He had a Chinese restaurant next door to the 19th hole back in the day. And we used to meet there, me and my friends, hang out with girlfriends and stuff, and then go out where we were going to go. So we're in there. Chinese guy, like, swings a wet towel. He's cursing up a storm. I said to him, what are you, out of your mind? So all of a sudden, we started beating him. gave them a beating. All of a sudden, two other ones come out. Now they get a beating. And next day, I'm going to Christy Dick. I said, what's up? He goes, you're going to apologize to somebody. And I said, sure. What did I do? He goes, I'm going to show you. So he brings in, now picture this, three Chinese guys with both with two black eyes each. So he goes, look at them and apologize. I couldn't even look up. I just busted out laughing. So Christy told one of his guys, take him outside and let him compose himself. I go outside. And the guy goes, you out of your mind? I said, come on, that's not funny. So we walk back in, sit back down again. Richie goes, all right, they're waiting for the apology. And then I pick my head up again because they were going, bah, 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 bah. They were like cackling. I walked out of there again. When I came back in, this time Christy looks at me, but we both laughed. And he told the three Chinese, get out of here.
Jeez. Now, that's, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's how the older guys were like that. They would sit down with you, talk to you. I had to sit down one time. They told me to come in. I went in. It was in the After Hours Club. Craig, I don't think we have this one in the book, but one of my many sit-downs, and I had to go. And went back to this, I think it was Little Dom, Baldy Dom. So we sit down with him and everything. And go, what'd you do in the club, the After Hours Club? I said, what about that kid? He goes, yeah, my managers came in and complained about you. What are they? Oh, this black guy, whoever, guy out of the neighborhood stabs my friend. So we gave him a beating and a beating. And that was overlooked too, because they just said, all right, get out. But that's how I got to know all the old timers. I was in jail with a lot of the big bosses. Always treated me with respect like I gave to them. That's how I got through life, I think. Yeah, I survived. I dealt with so many captains and stuff.
Yeah, and that's actually I had a note for that, because it read like that first part, the early years, kind of read like you get called into the principal's office. Like you see an opportunity, yeah, take it, and then it's like, yep, you got to go see head to the principal's office, complain, apologize, make it right. But there were so many of those. I'm reading these. I'm like, man, this guy is just walking on these heavy hitters, and he's just he's just showing deference and respect and talking his way out of one after the other after the other. I was like, what?
You know, I'll tell you one story, Craig, which is with Johnny Rizzo. Johnny Rizzo was a boss too, and I knew him from the Avenue. He used to watch me play football all the time and everything. He used to laugh like I died for the ball. I hit a kid. You know, and he used to go, this kid plays tough, he's good. And one night I'm driving along the Utrecht Avenue. I see these three guys beating on one. So I don't like that. You want to fight, you go in the schoolyard and you fight, and then you get up and shake hands. That was my way I did it. So I get out of the car with a crowbar, and I start whacking a couple of them, and then they all took off. Next day I'm in the schoolyard, and two big guys come. It was Carmine. So all my friends were around. I said, I am. So he goes, you need to get in the car. I said, yeah, okay. I'm a little bit more wise than that. I'm not getting in the car. So what do you want me to do, sit in the front seat too? So you see, you target the guy. Goes, all right, I'll sit in the front, get in the back. It's a good thing. You got to listen to me. Okay. So we drive. Now, right in the same neighborhood. Now, his son was Frankie Rizzo. So Frankie, I played ball with. I said, what am I doing at Frankie's house? The guy said, shut up. You'll be in there in a minute. Okay, go in. Mr. Rizzo goes, what made you help my son? I said, listen to me. I'm telling you the truth. I didn't know it was your son. I just didn't care because I don't like three guys banging up on one. And he tells me, you know, my other son is gay and he has a gay club down there. I want you to watch out for him. Just do like you did tonight. I said, okay, no problem. But he gave me the After Hours next door. Here's the key. It's yours.
Wow. So,
and I had so many guys come there. Like, it was unreal. I met so many guys in there. I made about 40,000 on grand opening. You know, and that was through the other guy. But all the older guys, man, you could talk to them. Not today, they pull out a gun and shoot you right in the office. That's disgusting.
Yeah, and I think that comes back to what Craig was saying, how Dade's kind of laid it out. You know, everybody always wonders how does this kid come up in this neighborhood and then end up in this life? And as it looks, it was kind of like laid out in the book, like you said, all these, you know, it seemed like the historical home of the mob in New York City. And was it kind of that just the culture of that neighborhood was, you know, the guys that are in that life, that the mob members are kind of the people, the guys that all the kids look up to, and it just was kind of one of those natural evolution things? Or was it that you were, as you were coming up, you're like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go be an earner. I'm going to go make them. I see the guys doing that stuff, making money. Is that kind of what led you into it? Or was it all these opportunities that finally at one point you find yourself running a shop and running a book and all that stuff?
It was just unreal because, like I said over and over again, the older guys you could talk to, if you know what you're going to say, don't ever disrespect them because you won't live to tomorrow. But then I had a wise guy across the street, Sirico's Bar, Sirico's Restaurant, Jimmy Ida. Jimmy Ida was, I don't know if the captain then or something. My mother had a variety store across the street. So these two guys went in there. Now, my mother calls me and she comes. These two guys keep coming back. They want me to pay them. Cool, I said. So I went across the street to Jimmy. I said, Jimmy, there's two guys. Well, point them out when they come. So they pulled up in the car, walk in to see my mother. My mother's a nervous wreck. Blessed deeds and everything else. And Jimmy walks in. He goes, what are you doing here? That's my club. My mother would make the sign cross. Well, what do I owe him now? Don't worry. I know the guy. How do you know that guy? And Jimmy was a great, great guy. I really got along with him. His brother worked out of the meat market right across the street. Meanwhile, they didn't talk to each other, brother Joey. And I had a great, he was one of the guys when I started. He sees me riding a 10-speed bike, and I'm driving mine and I'm pulling another one. So he goes, what are you doing? I said, my friend fell off the bike. All right. So I went back, put that one in my garage stone. I came by again. He goes, oops, a kid fell off it again. I said, what luck they have with this? He goes, it's not even the same bike, idiot. I know what you're doing. So he just laughed. You got it, like me and Craig agreed on it. It was like, you know how they draft for college, good ball players, and on the avenue and in the area. They watch you. If you fought on the street, you got back up, shook the guy's hand, you didn't disrespect people. It's like a scouting ground. It was a scouting ground to the mob.
Yeah.
John, just to follow up on that point, and this is one of the things that really attracted me to this project. You know, Carmine had a lot of natural charisma, highly intelligent, really good people skills, aggressive. He had a great right hand. So he brought all this into this dynamic on 13th Avenue. So he started out, you know, doing a lot of errands. And he was in a lot of fights, but then when he was in fights, he won, he lost, it didn't matter. He shook hands. So he carried himself a different way. And then when you look in the book, like as he gravitated towards different areas of crime, he was never a trigger man. So he never murdered anybody. And that was proven later because you can't go into the witness protection program. You have to reveal all your crimes. But he started out, you know, everything from robbing pot dealers, then gravitating up to robbing bookies, unaffiliated bookies. He was Google running his own book. He was running football sheets when they used to do the football sheets. Credit cards, when credit cards first came out, they exploded. That was a huge sideline for him. Auto vehicle theft. And he actually went away for that. You know, when they first put the VIN numbers on and chop shops were everywhere and they called them tag jobs, he was deeply involved in that. Bank robbery, armed robbery, just across the board. He was a reliable earner, very resourceful, charismatic, held himself a different way. So you could see why he was highly recruited by multiple families.
Yeah, and it and that yeah, to that point, I as I'm reading this, like you said, the you know, you see one guy getting jumped, you don't know him, but to you, that's wrong. You step in. And then you show respect to the older generation. There's one passage, and I don't want to give away a bunch of the book, but just a straight out brawl you had to a standstill with a guy from the way the book reads. But at the same time, both of you, you walked away shaking hands.
He beat me. And you but know just, what? Me and him got off the ground. There was a whole crowd there. Like there was a big boxing match. So yeah. I had two black eyes. He had one, I think. And I just said, okay, Dan, you know, great. And we left off not really that close, but not no more enemies. And, you know, when one day my cousin Joe Brewster calls in. Now, he's not really my cousin, but I just say that because that's what he used to tell everybody in the street. So, okay, so he calls me up. He goes, what happened yesterday? I said, I had a fight with the kid down the block. You know, my, I got black eyes. And I said, come on in. Let's go to lunch. So I didn't want to go in, so I got sunglasses on. So as soon as I went in, Joey's smiling like, that's not funny, you fuck. You know? So he looked at me, he goes, pull the glasses down. I pulled the glasses down and said, wow, must have been a brawl. I heard everybody talking about it. Yeah. Okay, so he goes like this to me. Are you ready to put in some work? So I took my glasses off. I said, you're asking me to kill that kid? I'm not doing it. I don't give a fuck. So he was trying to keep a straight face, but he busted out laughing. He goes, I knew you would turn it down. I said, I would never do that over a fight. Really.
Hey, John, just for the benefit of listeners, like some of the names, that's Joe Brewster, DiDomenico, I believe, was an infamous bank robber and a member of the bypass crew and, you know, and an enforcer for the Columbos. James Jimmy Ida was a captain and future underboss for the Genovese family. The earlier story about Agnello, Mr. Neil Della Croce, he was the underboss for the Gambinos that was passed over when Paul Castellano was made and was named head of the Gambinos, and that was the impetus for John Gotti to assassinate Castellano. And Christy Tick was one of the high ranking gangsters who went away for 100 years as part of the commission trial. So you have Carmine, you know, intersecting with these major vicious, you know, criminals and just having these like crazy stories.
Yeah. And to the and like we were saying earlier, like I was saying, you know, you had it seemed like you had this ethic and you were like you've got an ethic. You don't want somebody getting jumped. OK. Tells you to you know, offers to let you kill somebody, and it's a straight no. Did that? I mean, and it's in the face of all these heavy hitters. Like you've got this, you know, these captains and all these big guys. And as I'm reading the book, I'm like, you rub this guy wrong, and he's like a head of the Gambinos. You rub this guy wrong, he's a head of the Columbos. I'm like, oh man, I'm like, how is he doing this? But you're just all of this is happening in a contained space. And you're just surfing right down the middle of all these five different groups that are battering at each other at any given time. And you take turns getting on the wrong side of each one of them and talking it through, you know, every time. It was a great read.
And one of the reasons why I went into the program, excuse me, was because I was now I'm dealing with Carmine Sessa. He's the boss. I'm dealing with his brother, who's Michael Sessa, a captain. Me and him never got along from school. We went to school there. But he was a conceited bastard, sneaky. I just didn't like him. We didn't like each other, period. So one of my friends come to me, it's Joey Ambazino, and says to me, you know, Michael's given everybody else the money for the Shylock book. But at one point, he was charging me, too. Not only that, he gave me one of the guy's books, take over because the guy went away. And I knew him, too. And I said, I knew myself. Half of those, all the customers he has in that book are fake. So now I had to pay his tab, too. But when I talked to Michael, then I find out 3 times they tried to kill me. Come to my house. Told my friend Joey, when the door opens, if you stand there, shoot him. What? Joey said, I'm not doing that in front of the kids. You know, and he was just... out to get me. he had two Arab guys working with us, and he's just giving them 1 point, taking care of it. What the fuck am I, chopped liver? You know, yeah. You want to give me a hard on? And like before that, everything's fine. I was me, Joey, Joe Brewster, Bobby, and Carmine Ciani, Carmine Setzer, all used to go. We were fine. Now all of a sudden, I'm dealing with the brother, and it was a nightmare. Then when I find out he's trying to kill me, it got nastier and nastier. So I just said, it's my time to bail out after I heard they're going to kill me.
Yeah. So, and this is all small town stuff, right? I get it's New York City, but this neighborhood, it's got such a small town feel to it with all these different influences flowing around. Yeah.
When I found out all the stuff about Michael, what he was doing to me, I went 2 weeks before that. Tommy told me, go home and put on a suit. Now, I live all the way out. He ended Staten Island. I had to go all the way home, put on a suit. He wouldn't tell me what it was for. And then we left. There was four of us. So, where are we going? Don't worry. So, now I'm starting to work this trying to keep it a secret. But I just thought, we're going to sit down with Vicarino. You know, the two, Vicarino started the war, Carmine started the war, wherever it was. Well, we went there. So he brings me to the meeting. At that time, he's confident that I'm sitting with bosses and his brother's trying to kill me. I mean, where the fuck does that make sense?
Yeah.
I just said, that's it. This don't fit my 5-year plan. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Vicarina had a little mustache, excuse me. Had a little bit of mustache. He goes, you know, you're going to have to shave that. Because you can't be made with a mustache.
Oh, wow. So your own crew turns on you. It's kind of time to make that decision. How did you actually go about doing it? Did they get you on a charge, or did you approach the Bureau?
They had this other guy told me he has a score for me. I told him, not tonight, Bill. I'm not going out. No, Joe, just come and meet me. Just come and meet me. Now I know there's something wrong. So I said, goodbye, Billy, and hung up. Before you know it, my house is surrounded. But we go to the FBI place, and all of a sudden they say, hey, listen to this. And I hear them, because I bugged my friend Joey's car, Joey Ambrosino. So they went in the car, and they were told Michael kept going, I'm going to fucking kill him. I want him dead, the whole bullshit. So I heard it. They made me listen to it. I said, listen, I don't care if I got to sign anything, everything. I definitely want to testify against him. I just went up there I had the FBI named Jeff Tomlinson sitting on the stand. Michael said, looking at me, and I'm looking at him. And I said, Jeff, he thinks he scares me? He goes, all right, Colin, pay attention to the trial. You know, and it just turned out so nasty. And here I am just laying my life on the line. It turned into shit because they were making all these shitheads that didn't belong.
Yeah. So John,
Go ahead.
Yeah, just a little bit of context here. So Tommy Dates, while we're going through the background on the book, Tommy Dates helped fill in, and this is again another intersection where Carmine comes through. So it was the height of the Third Colombo War, and more than a dozen people had already been murdered. At this time, Tommy Dates goes to the 6-8 after a double shift. It's the middle of the night. Some guy rolls up, comes in, scared for his life, says, you know, he's being threatened by Joey Brains, Ambrosino, and Carmine in reality. So now Tommy Dates is a detective, so he's not working on organized crime cases. Plus, he's got an early connection to Carmine, so he had to refer the case. And that gave the as soon as they heard who was involved and had like a peripheral connection to this raging mob war going on the streets of Brooklyn, they put a lot of resources around it, and that's why when they were able to bring Carmine in. So then they bring Carmine in. He's on a RICO charge. He's facing a ridiculous amount of prison time, and then they reveal to him that he's marked for murder by not one, but two different mafia guys, including guys in his own crew. Now his Michael Sessa was elevated to captain because his brother Carmine Sessa was elevated to underboss. And this is and this was right in the middle of the impetus for the war. So what came from that, when Carmine started wearing a wire, because they weren't just going to take his word for it. They didn't just want him to share evidence. They wanted him to gather evidence. So they put him out in the field and he wore a wire. And I wanted to talk about that. But then based on that wire, they were able to get justification to bug Joey Ambrosino's car. And the bug they placed in that car unveiled so much information that helped to bring down all these folks. And Tommy Dade says in the book, you know, that was like sort of the impetus, one of the dominoes that helped, you know, end the war and then bring it all down.
Yeah. And as we get into that, you're, like you said, you told heavy hitters, the heavily connected people, you wouldn't kill people. When this war kicked off and it dragged you into the crew and say, get in the car, we're going to work. What,
we went out a couple of times at night. Now I had to go out with Michael Sessa and his car. It was so stupid to me. You go out 3 a.m. Who's out? A bird?
Yeah. You know? paper guys.
His brother asked me, like, how come you guys are not doing nothing? I says, come on, going out 3 a.m. I could shoot 6 garbage men. That's about it. what are you kidding? Your brother, you're going out at 3 a.m? Yeah. Absolutely stupidity, I said.
Well, yes, John, and just to correct, just a yeah. quick correction. No, he was expected to kill somebody. If he would have come across somebody, they fully expected him to pull the trigger and kill them.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting at. How are you gonna deal with that?
No, I did. Thank God I got out in time. Well, I wasn't pushed to that. I'm really grateful. My wife's grandmother used to tell me all the time, God forbid you do anything wrong, if you kill somebody or hurt, it's going to come back to you. She's a very religious woman. So I always listen to that. And I just said, like, oh, stupid shit, I'm not going to do it. I'm just not. But I, you know what? Out of all the people in the street, I would have shot Michael Sessa.
Well, if he's trying to get you, you got to get him first, right?
That's it. So when I was having a ball.
Yeah, because you did get him first, didn't you?
And John, think about this. Yeah. This mob beef is this war is raging. You know, I think the total body count was either 19 or 21. They even shot this poor by accident. They shot a teenage student in a beauty store who was totally innocent. It was just a sin. Now, this is going on, raging across Brooklyn, but it's business as usual for the other 4 families.
Yeah.
So, all the business is being done with beepers. Like back then, you know, they didn't have cell phones. So, you know, Carmine still got to go make his collections. He's still got to make his rounds. And he's watching it. Guys are switching sides left and right. It was just, Carmine, describe how chaotic it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they told me I'm on the street. So one of the deals they worked out, how much you collect, I was collecting over 11 grand a week or something. They told me you're not allowed to hit anybody, abuse anybody. I said I never did, you know, unless I had to, like guys really messed up. But that was only a couple guys. So I always tried to keep it peaceful. Like, what are you doing with the money I gave you? What are you doing? One guy, I got to stop gambling. I found out there he is in the gambling hole. Get out. I told him, get out. Your wife is calling. His wife used to call me. He left with the money. Oh, shit. That son of a bitch. And then you find him. But I used to try to help him. Like, I didn't want to be that bad guy you got to hide from. I wasn't into that shit.
Yeah.
And through that whole thing, it was just turned into a nightmare. And that was because of his brother. And I'll tell you what else I found out. We did the jewelry store, the heist there. It's that known. Now, we had me, the Birdman, that's Anthony Calisi, Mike Bellino. We had all these guys, Joey, Richard Brady. We had like 7, 8 guys. So he lets us know the day before, and we have to go meet at Richard Brady's house. Now, it's about 6:30 in the morning. Everybody's exhausted. So I go there, and I just said, like, why so many people? Oh, another guy was Hank the Bank. They made him the day before that. So we bought 3 days. So my friend Bert goes, listen, I'll go in with Carmine. I don't give a fuck what the rest of you do. I know he's got my back. I said, okay, let's do it. So they Hank the Bank was supposed to be outside, like, just watching and scaring people away. We run out in the street and everything, and he's gone. Now, this is the guy they just made. He fucking left us hanging. So we jumped in the car and everything, and the guy driving the car was Joey Imbazino, but he's caught speeding. And Bird told him, what are you, a fucking idiot? Calm down. So all of a sudden, and they said that was the reason why they killed him, but I don't believe it, because Bird was away for a while, and why he was away, I found out Michael Cessa was having an affair with his wife, and that's a fucking no-no. You don't do that, especially to a guy who's in jail taking the weight for bullshit. You know? How do you do it?
Yep. Yeah. So how did the entire war start? I mean, was it, these things seem to kick off in a very personal way. What was it that sparked it?
I think the one who started it was Greg Scarpa, the Reaper.
The whole thing started with, it was a succession play, Carmine Persico, the Snake, you know, had been in power for a decade. Through successive trials, he was in prison for life, basically facing 100 years. And it was just a power play. You know, they set up, first they had three heads of the three co-heads of the family, but then his brother was going to get out of jail. Vic Arena was named acting boss. And then they said Vic Arena didn't want to relinquish power. So supposedly it was that power struggle between those two. Everybody picked a side. But there was a lot more. When you look at some of the books that came out about the Colombo War, about the Colombo family, it was the most vicious family by far, petty, dysfunctional. And then you had in this wake, then everybody jockeying for position. And, you know, it just all exploded into this war. And then Greg Scarpa, which was a power on 13th Avenue. And actually, you know, Carmine had a huge, that was his nemesis on the Avenue. And to make him enemy of that guy was too. Crazy.
He put a hit on me too.
Yes.
At the end. So, but that, you know, it's coming back to me now. After we sat down with Vicarina and everything else, we all agreed, no shooting, no nothing. Next day, Greg is shooting at two of his guys, he said. That were bothering his daughter. It was a bunch of bullshit. They made it up, I know the two shooters that shot back at him, Frankie Notch and Chicky, and that's it. It was ridiculous. And he kept going on and on and on. I brought this up one time. I got arrested with 3 credit cards. I went away. Greg gets arrested with 66 credit cards. He sells them to a Secret Service agent. Gets no time. No court date.
Nice.
So now I'm telling guys, I don't know how much they used to tell him, be quiet unless you got proof.
He was cooperating with the government for decades. And really, the testimony he provided behind the scenes, you know, helped remove obstacles and rivals on the street, including his boss, the Persico. So at this time, when this is going on, Vic Arena actually promoted or helped orchestrate the promotion of Carmine Cessa to underboss. And then he tried to get him to get the captain's turn on Persico while he was in prison. So then Carmine Cessa went back to Persico. And then that's when the true conflict started. But at that time, they were still trying to broker a peace. And that's when Carmine Cessa heads out to Long Island, and he invites Carmine Imbriali, you know, to come for backup with him in this one of these, a series of these really monumental sit downs that really didn't work. And then it turned into open warfare on the streets of Brooklyn.
Yep. And then just,
you know what I'm saying? I'm saying, how could you trust me to come there and give me that much? Like, I was liked it. I was respected for that. And then I hear in the street, you're trying to kill me.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yep. That level of
Jack Greg was 33 years working with the government.
Yep. That is just that level of duplicity is staggering, you know, when you look back and think about it.
They gave him a license to kill.
Yeah. Just because he was providing for him. So when you start wearing a wire, walk us through what goes into you having to walk into these places, and I mean the amount of stress involved in being in that position, and kind of walk us through how you went about doing it.
Yeah, I had the wire on me. Funny thing was, I used to get in my car, play Frank Sinatra. I did it my way. I was singing on the tape. And the FBI, every time I wore the wire, go, "What's your story with Frank Sinatra?" I says, "I'm warming up, like I'm getting comfortable." I used to go. I went fearless to a party one time, a christening. They said, "You're out of your mind," because I'm driving to Highland Boulevard anyway. I did it my way. Like, what the fuck is he doing? Yeah, and I had to go to a christening one time, and Joey Ambrosino and the baby threw up all over my shirt. Now I'm wearing a wire. And Joey's wife, Lucille's like unbuttoning my shirt, going, "Come on, come on, I'll clean it." I says, "Lucille, I live 5 blocks away. I'll go have it cleaned, you know? Don't worry about it. Enjoy the party, okay?" But she just kept insisting. I said, "Lucille, I'm getting a little annoyed now, you know?" And nobody knew. I just said, "Well, that was a close one."
And Carmine, this was a sizable device, right?
It was that's the next thing I was going to bring up. Yeah, yeah.
Which one was that? The bike?
Were you still wearing the case with the tapes in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Explain the size of that thing and trying to hide it.
It wasn't too bad then. It started getting smaller and smaller, but wasn't too bad for me. I hit it down in in my crotch, and I had the wire going up. But it's just a short wire, and it was down by my hip more. So it covered me good. You know?
Yeah, those things, I remember they went from what the ones we used to. I'm not giving away any trade secrets. This is all online, but you know, having these, you know, back when I was doing it, the size of a Bic lighter, but I saw the older ones that were still laying around, and some of the big, like almost look like 8-tracks with belly bands trying to hide some of those things. It's like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Hey, Carmine, how many months were you on the street risking your life doing that?
Yeah. How long did you do that for?
It's about 6-7 months, I think.
6-7 months, John. Mm.
How did you deal with the stress of all that? Or was it kind of playing Frank Sinatra, you know, and just going the cowboy way?
When I made my mind up to go into the program, I had to deal with it like every other day. And, you know, I had rules. They told me, don't go crazy hitting people. Don't go crazy setting people. I told them, I'm not going to do that. I made a deal. I'm going to stick to it. And that's the way it was. And my friend Tommy, let me tell you, he did so much for me. He came and visited me when I was first in the jail, and he goes, "What do you want to eat for lunch?" I said, "They just gave me a menu. Just want the menu. What do you want for lunch?" So he went out and bought me a nice sandwich, and he came back and everything. He goes, "I'm happy for you. You did the right thing." And after that, I just followed his lead. Me and Tommy Day go back a long time, because in Brooklyn, we were dating two sisters. I was the criminal and the cop across the table.
You can't make this stuff up, John.
No, I got a soft spot for that, because you know, the public always thinks that we, you know, law enforcement and the criminal element, we always got to be, you know, butting heads and everything. But there's many a times I had guys that, you know, I could call them out from a block away and be like, "Hey, buddy, you got a warrant today. You got to go." And because we'd worked together before and they knew that I wasn't going to abuse them, we, you know, it's business. You got to go to jail today. You'll be back probably tomorrow. But I really did want you to talk about that relationship with you and Dades, because it, you know, it's just business. I mean, you guys might be testifying against each other in a courtroom, but at the same time, you can have that respect with people, because it's just, yeah, you got to go do your time, but it doesn't mean you're necessarily, you know, you got to be hating on, you don't have to hate somebody just because you're on opposite sides of the business, so to speak.
Yeah. And obviously, one of the rules, the big rules, is you're not going to rat on somebody. You know, you got to take it to the grave. You get bullshit. I'm getting abused by Michael. The bullshit. And I thought about it when the war started. I had a couple of good friends on the other side. I was going to set him up, tell him, "I got your money," and kill him. But then I couldn't even stand there and look at Conway. Would it, you know, I feel like he knows, you know?
Yep.
And I wouldn't do it.
John, Conway had some really, you know, good things to say about, you know, some of the agents like Jeff Tomlinson. Conway, why don't you talk about that whole process? Because that once they took him off the street, you know, and then he had to go into safe houses and then unravel, you know, decades and provide all this information. So talk about that process, Conway.
Yeah, how long that debrief lasted?
me and my wife had to go down and we're sitting in there and they said, look, we're going to give you some of the rules now. You can't bring your dog. My wife goes, okay, end of discussion. Now, you got four EDAs. And they walked out in the hallway like, okay, come back in. All right, we'll allow you to take the dog. That's it, what they said. My wife goes, my daughter's got a cat. No. All right, that's it. Come on, let's go. Let's see. They all walk out again. Come back in. All right, you take the cat. Okay. Now we're gone. I said one more thing. What? Where? I got parakeets. I said, then they finally come back and go, this is Andrew Weissman. He was a good guy to me. You don't got fish or nothing, do you? I said, no. And they took me. One of the funny things when we were there, it's like I got five kids in a townhouse, right? We're running all around. There, a couple of them were babies. And Jeff Tomlinson comes to the house and goes, I got some news, some bad news. I said, what? So now I'm thinking they killed one of my brothers or something like that. We never had anything to do with this. It goes, the birds didn't make it. I was like, no, we thought they were stool pigeons.
That's crazy.
And then we're out in somewhere up in the Poconos. So I had nothing to do. I bought a BB gun. You know, my daughter was into Alvin and the Chipmunks. Uh-oh. I shot three of them. And I walked into the taxidermy store. Now you got all big guys with bellies out, with fenders, the hats on, and they're like doing deer and bear. I handed three chipmunks on the table, and the owner goes, "Are you fucking crazy?" Excuse me. He says, "This is against the law." What do you mean? You can't stop them for me? I told him my daughter's into chipmunks. I've already got some outfits. He goes, "Listen, sir, pick those up and get out." So I left them in the freezer. When we left the post, they said they cleaned it out and they found three dead chipmunks. I said, yeah, that's right, Jeff. I was a hunter up there. Yeah, you're fine.
How often did they make a move? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
One time they did it on their own, like Jeff and Chris Favo. Because they told the Vecchio, if you tell anybody about Carmine's in the program, he has a nice family, he's a good guy. Sure enough, he tells Greg Scarpa. This is what I heard.
Ugh.
He tells Greg Scarpa. Now, Greg Scarpa's out to get me. Meanwhile, I'm still going to dinner wearing a wire. Craig is wearing his wire. And he tells Carmine, I think he's no good. I think he's a rat. You know, I'm saying, now, Jeff Donaldson told me, Greg is working with the program for 30 years.
Ugh.
I said, you got to be fucking kidding me. How's he walking the street? I'm not allowed to slap somebody. And this guy's shooting people.
Yeah.
Jeff goes, listen, I got my own opinion on that. And really. So we made it clear. Remember that the Sopranos, the guy hit the desk and goes, we're going to win this one? Remember?
Okay. I thought you were saying that he did that. Yeah, I'm with you.
The agent goes, well, we're going to win this one. They got that from the Vecchio. Because he said, we're going to win. That was right after Greg killed Nicky Black. Of course, they told him where he was. And he went after him.
Wow.
Yeah, all this is documented in multiple books and newspaper accounts. Like, and then Carmine got sucked into this whole thing and he had a target on his back and then they left him out to dry.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder how many different people at any given time in any given room are all wearing a wire for different feds, you know?
Yeah.
at the height of this thing. Yeah,
yeah, that's why when it came out, they took Carmine off the streets, and then that's it, right to the safe house, and his family.
Yeah, they,
so they interestingly enough, his wife, I can't say enough good things. This project could not happen without his wife, you know, helping us along. I just imagine there was this really poignant story about when Carmine was taken off the street, and then they had to pack up the house. So the agents, they got gigantic trailer, and with Janet there and by herself, she had to work with the movers all day to pack up the whole entire house, you know, getting ready to disappear into the program. I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She didn't make it easy for them. I'll tell you that much.
Well, yeah. Go into that. go ahead.
When I got back from testifying, I was only there for a little while, because now everybody knows. And the truck was gone. They said, what happened? They took it all, but I don't like the way they packed. We can't get everything. But yeah, my wife, thankfully, and my kids were still all together. Live out west now.
Yeah.
It's a different life.
So
all these guys go into the program. It's not easy. Not easy at all.
Yep, that's what I was going to get into. Over time, how did that wear on you? Being as time dragged on, as far as the family goes, how what was the stress of just living that life?
They had to adjust, but they did. Funny, my younger son that time, we were out in this place, and one of the kids in school go, "How come you moved here?" My little son go, "Somebody's after my father." What did you say?
Time to move.
I said, that's not the right answer. Yeah. I don't know. He caught me off guard. I said, oh, shit, here we go. But, my wife and kids, I wouldn't have been going through this. And through the years, I've seen all these guys go into the program with their wives. They're all divorced, living alone, who committed more crimes. It's ridiculous. I got a second chance, and I took it. And thank God, thank my wife, my kids, Greg, Tommy. I'm just moving on, going forward.
Yeah, that's great.
And, you have a very, now, very important family.
Yeah, and with the the witness protection, was that a conscious decision for you guys? Did you guys decide together that it was time to leave the program, or was it did it age out? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. My wife said that's it. We're done. Of course, after the two times they came to my house to kill me.
Yeah.
After that, she goes, "This is ridiculous." And they were supposed to, my friend Joey, Michael, would say, "Listen, if you see him walking from the back, shoot him." Joe goes, "I'm not fucking doing that. I wouldn't want it done to me. I'm sure not doing it to Carmine."
Yeah.
You know?
So even when you were in the program, they found you twice?
No. He was just referencing going into the program.
Gotcha.
I believe, you know, just from reporting on this, there's a lot of restrictions and there's a lot of oversight. And sometimes, you know, it gets to be overbearing. So as the years wore on, and there's no financial incentive. So, you know, ultimately, Carmine, that's why, you know, you left the program, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had enough of the rules, stupid rules. And then at the end, since I was done testifying, they were looking to screw me either way. I mean, any trip that we made, like on vacation or something, you had to have the proof. One time I had it approved, and the marshal comes and goes, "Listen, we got to throw you out of the program. You never got that approved." I said, "You fucking approved it. What are you talking about?" 2 days later, they picked me up. "Where are we going?" "Going to Washington." "Well, why?" I said, "You said, we got to talk about that trip." I said, "Hope that marshal's coming." So he comes, we go in, big guy, all the FBI's in there, like, "And what made you take this trip?" "I got it okay from this guy." He goes, and the marshal looked and goes, "I might have. You might have.
Might have."
"And you gave me okay. So now you're telling me he left on his own?" But I told him, he's fucking crazy, this guy. I gave him, you know, I gave him the plans, where I'm stopping, everything. What hotel I'm staying at. He came back and said, "Okay, here you go." sign this. Okay. I said, where's the letter I signed? They looked back. Yeah, the trip was approved. Sorry to bother you. I said, so you brought me all the way up to Washington with this shit. No wonder why the government's going broke.
I think the one thing that jumped out at me was, you know, generally speaking, Carmine, and keep me honest here, Carmine felt like he got a fair shake from the government. You know, it was a fresh start, but it certainly was not easy by any stretch. You know, a lot of challenges, but like, right, don't you feel you got a fair shake from the government, Carmine?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I got a second chance, and I ran with it. I'm telling you. We go to church in the morning. I'm into it. I'm into my family, my life, God, and I really took the bulls by the horn, and I got a good change.
That's good. Not a lot of people get that, but yeah, I can see living under a minder. I mean, basically, you had a minder for your life. I can see that getting to a point. It's time to go your own way. Yeah, I was just glad to clear up. I thought for a moment you were like, well, they found me twice, so I'm in this program. I'm out of here. It's like, that's a problem.
The only thing the government does wrong is they place you somewhere, and you have no background. No, so like you're in like the Twilight Zone. So one day the marshal goes, you gotta go to the bank and open up a bank account and everything. So we're in there. I'm wearing like a sweatsuit with a t-shirt. And the manager comes over after he talks to him and he goes, I guess to me, hey, are you in the witness protection program? I look at the marshal, I says, is your mother in the program? And the guy goes, you have to answer him like that. What are you kidding me? This is my cover. People are going to ask me so bad.
Off to a bad start with that one.
That's how it started out. And I said, I don't think this guy's on the ball. When I was up in Washington, really.
Wow.
He should get his head checked.
Yeah, that's insane. But yeah, okay. Yeah, I get that at some point you're like, I'm good on my own. Thanks. You don't need to be telling my accountant that I'm in the program. I did have, there was a couple questions I had that were touched on in the book back in the age that you got started. Like when you got started, I guess you got your first book or you took over the Shylock program. Were you still in your teens when you just started taking these opportunities?
Yeah. I think about 15, anywhere from 14 to 16.
Wow. And as I was reading, I saw a couple of these like the credit card thing. Did you just see an opportunity and figure it out as you went? Because and the chop shop too.
Like this. What do we got planned for today? Do we have any jewelry stores around? I used to knock down the list. Then all of a sudden, I got a new batch of credit cards. Okay, we're going to go shopping here. We're going to go shop. But now, you know what? Even the guy that I used to get them from, he says to me, listen, why don't you take a trip and don't use them in New York. Go somewhere out, like anywhere you want. Because people are so much trustworthy. In New York, the minute the cards came in and I sold the cards, people were running for the same places. And it was ridiculous. This guy used to tell me it's like a sideshow. The cops could stand on the corner and pick these all out. And I just said, you know what? You're right. You're definitely right. And I had this guy who owned a lighting store. His name was Peter. And I used to go there. When I went one time, two times, the name was different. Ghost, can you tell me what's going on? I said, I don't know if you want to know. these are phony cards. So he goes, okay, thank you. Come back and shop. So I said, listen, Peter, how about I leave you the cards? I'll leave you three or four cards. You run them through. Whatever we make, we split. I used to go in and get 12,000, 10,000, 20,000. And he goes, this one went through. It's a doctor's card.
Oh, jeez.
So now everybody know, like my Michael, all the guys. But where are you doing that? I can't tell you. It's my uncle's shop. You're not going there. So my uncle won't deal with nobody else. And I'm not bringing you. They were like, right away, you're making that much money. We want it. Fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm not giving it up. I got my own connections. You deal with yours.
Yeah, my game.
Yeah.
And I did have, as I was looking through a couple other things, that the Tommaso's dog, as I was reading that, like, can you, that just, I did, that one caught me, funny. Can you walk me through that one?
Yeah. I had a good friend of mine at the time, Nicky Rizzo. His father was Stone Cold Killer, Nicky Rizzo Sr. But Nicky, you never know, he was dying there, red hair, freckles. I knew him from like elementary school. So he always hung out. He had a lot of balls, or let's just say he was a rebel. He'll kill you in the drop of a dime line. So I go, the candy store calls me, Lukey. Lukey goes, Carmine, where are you? I'm in bed. What do you want? You need to come down here, please. I'm having trouble. Lukey, what's going on? Please, could you come down here? So I go down there. He goes, he's in the basement. Who's in the basement? It's my friend, Nicky. And he's got the dog tied up. I said, because he brought that up once before. I said, are you crazy to kidnap a dog? So now he's got the dog tied up. My friend Frankie Notch's dad, he's going, I tried to talk to him. I said, Nicky, what are you planning on doing here? Now it's Tommaso's dog. It's a German Shepherd. Nice dog. I won't hurt an animal either. And there he is. He's with the scissors. He goes, I'm just going to cut off some. Don't do it. Don't. Now they're on the poles in the neighborhood. Please find this dog. There's a reward. I said, everybody's looking for it. You idiot. Boy, you think it's bad? I said, I don't know who's dropping the dog off, but it ain't me. So, all right, I'll take it on my own. I said, Nicky, let the dog back. We drove by, right up the block, we let him out. Really, Nicky, that was so stupid. And he was just the type of kid, if he was your friend, he was your friend. If he wasn't your friend, you better watch your back.
Hey, Carmine, for those who are not familiar with South Brooklyn, Tommaso's is like this really famous Italian restaurant where Chef Tom used to come out and he would sing opera. And it was half a block from the Veterans and Friends Club, which was, a big Gambino clubhouse. So all these guys used to come in, and when Tommaso's dog went missing, he was destroyed. Because this was his baby. So they shut down the restaurant, and Tommaso's is looking for his dog. So everybody, including Nicky Rizzo's father, is out looking for this stupid dog throughout the neighborhood. And now Carmine goes in and he sees it's in the basement, and he walks right into this place.
So
the story about that club too, right next to Tommaso's, was Nicky goes, come on, who's got money for tonight? We used to go out on Friday, Saturday, Sundays, I don't have no money. Well, I don't have no money. So first he goes, let me get gas. He goes to get gas. He fills up the car and rips out with the pump. The whole thing broke and was showering all over. I said, okay, this is going to be hell of a night. So we go by with Tommaso's again. And he goes, I got to run in a minute. Why he's running in? He puts down a ski mask and picks up a shotgun. He walks in there to all the wise guys. Now, one of the biggest guys was Jerry Lang. He was the underboss with Persico. So Nicky tells them all, put your wallets, your jewelry, money, all on the table. So Jerry Lang stood up and told him, you sure you want to do this, son? We're going to find you. So he thought about it. He put down the shotgun, took off the mask. Jerry goes, sit down, you fucking idiot. So he comes out to the car, me and Frankie there. He goes, you can come in. I said, I'm not going in. With you. You're a nut job. He was so crazy. That kid got killed because this girl was mouthing off to him. He crushed her glass and rubbed it in her face. She had two brothers. They were German, one Italian, four guys. And when they drive by his house, they start shooting. Now he's loving it because he goes upstairs and starts. He has all the rifles down by the window. So he gets up and starts shooting. One straight bullet hit them right in the forehead, killed them. So, his mother went into a nut house. Matter of fact, a year later, his brother Charlie fell in a construction site through the elevator and died. So, she lost two of her sons.
Wow.
But Nicky, while I was away, listen, my father, I don't know about that kid, but I'm glad he's your friend. I said, Dad, you always told me you didn't trust him. Because he goes, listen, your mother goes food shop and he's outside your store waiting to carry her groceries. he sits with me, we play cards.
Wow.
You knew half the story. And Craig, what, remember the one I wrote about when we went out to a nightclub? Go to a nightclub, this muscle guy, he's walking around like he bangs into Nikki and doesn't say nothing like that. So when he came to the bar, me and Frankie go, you're going to take that shit? What are you talking about? So we didn't know he was going to go this far. But really? The guy made you like a punk. Oh, yeah? So he goes, all right, we're going to leave now, right? So as we're leaving, the guy's getting in the car with us. I said, Nikki, what's going on here? He wants to come and hang out, smoke a joint. I said, okay. And we get in the car. Now I'm, me and Frankie thinking, like, really? Nikki is a mush, like... We go to the Bedrock Bar. Nikki goes, you want to smoke some pot? Boom. He goes up the block. And all of a sudden, you hear bang, bang, bang. Three shots. He killed him. Comes right back into the bar. And he goes, drinks on the house. Frankie goes, take the car, call me, drive me home.
But that's just like another day in that neighborhood with five different families all living together. It's like, where it's funny. It's like, for my equivalent, growing up in a small town in upstate New York, when he goes in to rob a bunch of mafia heads with a shotgun and they just tell him to put it down and sit. It's like me snowballing cars when I was a kid.
And Jerry Lyons happens to know his father very well.
Yeah.
You're not here. We're going to come find you.
Yeah.
He had to think about it. Took off your ski mask. Then he comes running out the car. Come on in. We're all going to eat. Fuck you. Yeah.
That's insanity. But the way you say it, it's like, hey, it's a Friday night. we had nothing to do.
And back in the early age, when we were in grammar school, one time he told me in school, like, I'm going to kill you at 3 o'clock. So I came running home. And when I'm running home, there's my father sitting on the couch. He goes, what the fuck are you doing? I said, the kid told me he's going to beat the shit out of me at 3 o'clock. And you fucking ran like this? Okay. Next morning, before my father goes to work, he goes, come on, I'm taking you to school. I had to be 6, 7, something like that, and walk in. My father goes, who's the kid? I said, right there. So he goes, well, do your business. I got him. Like, now I'm crying. I'm giving him a beating of his life. I'm biting him. I'm doing everything. After that, we were best friends, and it stayed like that through our whole life.
Wow. Wow.
He was a good kid, but made his own rules.
Yeah, clearly.
Okay. So, John, you see, it just, the stories come, and we're just scratching the surface with this book, because Carmen has so much more material. So we're looking to develop that further and see where it takes us.
Yeah, that's as I'm sitting here, I'm like, we're going to have to do this again. I feel like we barely even got started with this, you know? Yeah. But it is, it's Tuesday night. We've been going over an hour and I don't want to keep you guys, but I would like to continue this conversation because it's, I don't want to give away everything in your book, but Carmine, this has been a fascinating just look to see how your life just intercourse through all these different kind of like big historic events when it comes to those the 80s when not only the mob fighting each other, but that's when the feds really decided, okay, you guys got to go. And that's when they really started putting the pressure on. That's a big moment, you know?
And the wise guy, the older wise guys used to say, listen, if they don't have anything on you and they want you, you'll get something on you. You know, so it has to be low key. But today, after John Gotti took over, like, what was he, a fucking movie star? Compare him to Carlo Gambino. Carlo Gambino walked around like a bum.
Right. Stayed under the radar.
He pointed the finger at you.
He stayed under the radar. I think we got a wrap for tonight, but I really appreciate you guys joining me. I can't wait to finish the rest of the book. It's been great.
Hey, John, great. Really appreciate you having us on. I just want to, you know, really thank the folks at Wild Blue Press. Something special going on over there, supporting, you know, independent projects and writers, and, you know, just really check out Wild Blue Press and a lot of stuff. Just thanks to my wife for putting up with all this crazy stuff, you know, Carmine, Tommy Dades, and of course, Janet, you know.
Yep. And
while this book, I was back at school. Read it again. Read it again.
Yeah, the editing process must have been a riot.
It was.
You know, John, when his call mine's handlers used to tell him every time when he testified, and he testified at a bunch of trials, just make sure you tell the judge, I got all the facts. I know everything. I have a lot of evidence, but I'm just terrible with dates. So they made him say that up front. So it was, it carried through. And thank God Janet was there to keep us, you know. And remember, we did this remote. I've never met Carmine. We grew up in the same neighborhood. I was born in 71, him in 57. So I have a real good feel for the setting. But this was all done during the pandemic, you know, through telephone. So it was an interesting project.
Yeah. And Craig, best place to find your preferred method for the Carmine and the 13th Avenue Boys, Amazon, Books A Million, where?
Amazon, you know, available in hardcover, paperback, and ebook, Kindle. And then also check out, you know, Wild Blue Press for a lot of the great authors there. And really appreciate the
help. Yep. And full disclosure, Wild Blue is my publisher for Blood Red Ivory. And they have been very supportive, very, very good at, they put us together. It's pretty awesome when you can go through the catalog and find amazing stories to talk about. But so yeah, Carmine, thank you for joining us. Craig, do you have any
thank you
socials?
For having us.
Yeah, just Wild Blue Press, check us out. Okay. Check me out on Facebook as well, Craig McGuire. And Carmine, you want to thank anybody?
Yeah, don't forget to thank my friend Tommy Dade.
Yeah,
my
of course. First and second.
We could have been together. Brother-in-laws.
Yeah, right. Back in the day.
Yeah. That would have been hell of a dinner conversation.
Yeah. Well, Carmine, I pray for continued safety for you and your family. And Craig, so it was great talking to you. And anytime you guys want to come back, I think we could probably do a couple more hours of this.
Thanks, John.
All right. Great.
All right.
Thank you again.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks.